From NPR News in Washington, I'm Ray Suarez, and this is Talk of the Nation. When ships brought captives from Africa to work in the New World, their tradition, beliefs, and worldview came with the cargo.
The Yoruba belief system is actually a total lifestyle, how you conduct yourself, your character, as well as worshiping and ritual. So that Orisha refers to the more than 401 divinities. Each thing of nature is a divinity or has an inherent power.
Around Latin America, the old world religions of Africa and Europe created a new world stew. Catholic saints who represent ancient African deities, practices and ideas that live side by side with Catholicism. The leader of the Catholic Church, Pope John Paul, is visiting one of Santeria's chief homes, Cuba. Talk of the Nation after the news.
From National Public Radio News in Washington, I'm Corva Coleman. White House prosecutors, Whitewater prosecutors, have expanded their investigation to find if President Clinton had an affair with a White House intern and then encouraged her to cover it up. Presidential aides say Mr. Clinton is outraged by the charges and denies them. White House Press Secretary Mike McCurry says Mr. Clinton is urging everyone to tell the truth.
He's made clear from the beginning that he wants people to tell the truth in all matters. He's said that to anyone who is ever in a position to be required to provide factual information.
Including her.
He has not directed any communication that I'm aware of directly to her.
Justice Department officials say that Whitewater Independent Counsel Kenneth Starr arranged for the intern, Monica Lewinsky, to be secretly taped discussing the matter. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu says he's ready to take difficult steps toward peace in the Middle East, but he's not prepared to put his country at risk. The prime minister is in Washington for talks with President Clinton and congressional leaders about the peace process, and he says he'll meet with Palestinian leader Yasser Arafat this week in Washington if he is asked to. Arafat is to meet with Mr. Clinton tomorrow. Pope John Paul II is expected to arrive in Havana, Cuba shortly for an unprecedented trip to the communist nation. From Havana, NPR's Philip Davis reports.
The Pope will divide his time between the capital, Havana, and Cuba's other major cities. After spending the night here, he'll travel on successive days to Santa Clara, Camagüey, and Santiago, returning each evening to the capital. There he'll go into various neighborhoods and talk to the people there. The visit of the 77-year-old pontiff will culminate in a Sunday mass in Havana's vast Revolution Square. Hundreds of thousands of Cubans are expected to attend. Cubans interviewed here say they're enthusiastic about the Pope's visit and hope it will lead to greater religious freedom and tolerance on this communist island. Philip Davis, NPR News, Havana.
A French newspaper reports that French health workers injected 175,000 children with an excessive dose of hepatitis B vaccine in 1995. Some of the children got sick with blackouts, headaches, and nausea. The paper says their parents were never informed of the error. Health officials have recalled the vaccine, which was reportedly used only in the Paris region, saying it's too strong for children. Reputed organized crime boss John Gotti Jr. has been indicted on racketeering charges in New York State. 22 other people have also been indicted with him. Gotti's father, John Gotti Sr., is already serving a life sentence for murder and racketeering charges. He reportedly tapped his son to head the family, a decision authorities say reportedly upset other organized crime clans. On Wall Street, the Dow was down 118 points at 77.54. This is NPR. In NPR's business update, the Federal Reserve says most parts of the country are now feeling the effects of Asia's financial crisis. The nation's central bank says American manufacturers are reporting weakened demand for everything from industrial machinery to processed foods. The bank released its Beige Book survey of economic conditions today, gathered from 12 regional banks. The latest report says, however, the pace of economic growth continues to be moderate, and labor markets are either tight or very tight in all districts. IBM stock has been pressured now that the company says its earnings won't meet Wall Street expectations. IBM is also warning that a stronger dollar and higher expenses will hurt this year's first quarter profits. Bloomberg's Paul Lynn reports.
IBM reported fourth quarter earnings of $2.11 for each diluted share, but analysts were expecting $2.15. The company also said first quarter profit would be 10 to 15 cents below year-ago results. At Lehman Brothers, analyst George Elling says the big question for IBM is what happens after the first quarter.
Does the company bounce back,
immediately in Q2. And I think that's another unknown, considering what's going on in Asia and the possible, what I call, ripple effect from the problems there. So I think it's somewhat more uncertain. The stock had obviously been a great performer over the past year or two, and I just felt that for the time being, I'd rather sit on the sidelines and look for another opportunity to become more aggressive.
Elling has cut his rating on IBM to neutral from outperform. He also has reduced his earnings estimates going forward. This is Paul Lynn.
Again, on Wall Street, the Dow is down 118 points. The NASDAQ is off more than 8 points. I'm Korva Coleman, NPR News, from Washington.
Support for NPR comes from the W. Alton Jones Foundation for a coverage of efforts to reduce threats of nuclear war and proliferation. www.wajones.org.
This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Ray Suarez. This hour on the program, the Afro-Caribbean faith called Santeria. One of its chief homes in the New World is Cuba, where Africans in bondage brought their religion from the west coast of Africa. Centuries of cross-cultural contact created what scholars call a syncretic faith, part traditional African, part Catholic, but no longer fully either one. Today, Pope John Paul arrives in a Cuba where the institutional life of the Catholic Church that once dominated the country has withered under official harassment and sanction, while the folk beliefs, more easily sustained without religious schools and an ordained clergy, has hung on. You may live in a part of the country where there are few Caribbeans, especially Spanish-speaking ones, Puerto Ricans, Dominicans, Cubans. Or you may just not be sure if you've ever seen any evidence of Santeria practice where you live. Keep an eye out when you're in a Spanish-speaking part of town. Is there a store called a botanica? Do businesses in Latin neighborhoods feature a portrait or a statue of St. Barbara or St. Lazarus shown wounded on crutches accompanied by a dog? Do you notice people walking the streets of the barrio dressed all in white? Are there candles in your local supermarket that show the wounded hand of Jesus or a circle of Christian saints referred to as Las Siete Potencias Africanas, the Seven African Powers? After this hour, you may be more intrigued than puzzled by this new world religion. The believers range everywhere from people trying to worship in a purely African way, learning the customs and language of Yoruba religion without an alloy of Catholicism, while others consider themselves first and foremost Catholics, who maintain these folk practices with no contradiction or tension. A few years ago, I was in a large botanica in Miami. It was the largest one I had ever seen. It was the size of a small supermarket instead of the little storefronts I was used to in New York. And I asked the owner, who sold potions, prayers, amulets, African statuary, and ritual clothing, whether she considered herself a Catholic. She seemed stunned by the question. Catholic? Of course I'm Catholic in everything. Baptism, prayers, my wedding, everything. Santeria this hour on the program, the New World faith living side by side with more traditional Roman Catholicism. Joseph Murphy is with me here in Washington. He's the author of Santeria, an African Religion in America, and a professor of theology at Georgetown University. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Ray.
And from Atlanta, Arturo Lindsay is with us, professor of art and art history at Spelman College, and the author of Santeria, Aesthetics in Contemporary Latin American Art. Good to have you with us.
Oh, thank you, Ray.
Our number in Washington, 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Well, people may become familiar with the existence of Santeria in an unfortunate way, I guess, has been my experience, when on their local news they'll see police leading goats out of a tenement building or taking chickens out of a backyard, and a not very well-informed news report will
tell them that some strange religious practices that involve animal sacrifice are going on back there. And, you know, in the course of a minute and a half report, you can't learn that much anyway. But, Joseph Murphy, are there any good statistics on just how many people follow at one level or another this faith in the United States?
I think it's very difficult to know that, Ray. It's their religion is very widespread in the U.S., and you made a nice spectrum in your introduction there, saying of people who are dedicated to it as priests and priestesses, as opposed to people who are connected to it, who might go into a botanica once in a while. So if you included all those people, it would probably be the bulk of people of Caribbean origin or descent in the United States are in some way connected to the tradition. But there are far fewer priests and priestesses.
Well, recently, in the last several years, a case went all the way to the Supreme Court involving a church with mostly Cuban membership in Hialeah, Florida. The town tried to ban animal sacrifice, and the Church of the Lucumi fought back, right, and prevailed in the Supreme Court, though the final chapters are still being written now. But I visited that church, and I interviewed one of the priests there, and he was not in any way a Christian. Right. He used the Yoruba language in references. He prayed in Yoruba. This was not sort of marked out on that continuum somewhere in the middle between the Vatican and the Gold Coast. This was solidly rooted in Africa.
Right, right. I think, depending on who you will talk to, some people would define themselves, like the botanica owner, as very Catholic, who practices these other non-Catholic practices, whereas the priest at the Church of Lukumi Babaluaye considers themselves to be Lukumi and not mm-hmm. Catholic at all. So again, it's a kind of question of a community or even an individual defining him or herself in harmony with these traditions from Africa.
Arturo Lindsay, if you grow up Latin in this country, even if you don't consider yourself even nominally a Santeria follower, you'll know the visual signs in your sleep. I mean, these are emblems, signs, saints that you become very familiar with. You almost drink it with your water.
Mm-hmm. Well, you hear it in the music. It's interesting that I find that a number of people are very surprised when I told them about the I Love Lucy show, and Ricky Ricardo singing Babalu, Babalu, Aye, that indeed there was the Orishas. So the Orishas have been here for quite a while. This is not a recent phenomenon, but as you, I think, were saying in the introduction, which is absolutely true, a lot of the signs are there. They're in front of people every day in anywhere close to a Latino community where the presence of Santeria exists. But you have to be able to decode the things that you're seeing. But I wanted to get back to one of the questions that you raised earlier to Joe. And by the way, hi, Joe. How you doing?
Hi, Arturo.
When you were talking in terms of the percentage of people that are followers of Santeria or Santeros, that number is even more confusing when you look at who are, let's say, believers and practitioners. Because you can have practitioners, which would be, you know, people who are actually doing it on a daily basis. They're part of an ile, a house, you know, et cetera. But you have a host of other people, you know, who do indeed believe in the santos. And when faced with a particular crisis, will indeed go, you know, to an orisha before they'll go to a Roman Catholic saint. So that number is kind of hard to really tell.
And I'm also interested, I've been noticing that the range of who's interested in it is growing a little wider than we sometimes think. I was in some Mexican neighborhoods last year and saw a botanica in a neighborhood that was virtually 100% Mexican, and I hadn't really... it kind of surprised me that it was there, and I went in and asked if they were busy, and they said yes, they were. also, in a Central American neighborhood in Los Angeles, I saw a botanica there, and people were coming in and out, and I thought, well, gee, there must be something very compelling about this faith once people get to the United States that sort of draws them into it, because I'm not sure that if you're in Guerrero or Campeche or someplace in Mexico that you're going to run across this.
Mm-hmm.
But Panama, though, is, I guess, an exception to that. I mean, you're Panamanian, Arturo, right?
Right. Well, I grew up in Panama, and, I mean, I was aware of Santeria, you know, there, just as I was aware of Voodoo and Obia, etc. I mean, Panama, although physically it's part of Central America, it is very much Caribbean, particularly with the canal, with a number of Caribbean people that came there. I mean, myself, my four grandparents were born in four different Caribbean islands. As it was said earlier in the introductions, when people travel, the baggage, the cultural baggage that they travel with that also. Panama, there's a growing community, a Santero community in Panama. After the revolution, of course, many Cubans went to Panama, and even now, you find a greater presence, you know, of Cubanos. And it's not even so much the Cubanos, but as you were saying before, when people begin to find out more and more about the religion, they begin to interact with it more. So you have a number of Panamanians that are Santeros also. But I think the bottom line to this, Ray, is that you go with what works for you. So if there's a problem in your life and you've been going to the doctor, you've been going to your friends, you've been going to the psychiatrist, you do all these different things and you go to church, et cetera, et cetera, and you still have the problem and you turn to a santo, santero rather, and you begin praying to an orisha, and if that begins to work for you, then that's what you're going to continue to do. So you're right. You have blonde, blue-eyed people who are practicing the religion today. You have Asians, I have a similar story to yours. I was in Washington not long ago and ran into some Salvadoreños, you know, that were puro santeros, you know, and that surprised me.
How did the religion make the leap from a secret faith hidden under the cover of Orthodox Catholic saints to something that can be practiced by white middle-class people as they spread around this hemisphere?
Well, I think Arturo is right. It's what works. And the tradition offers so many media, aesthetic and moral and ritual, that it just pulls people into it. And so the cultural heritage or the cultural containers are very malleable, and mm-hmm. the tradition takes in what is around it, and therefore all kinds of people, I think, can find a place in it. You were talking about the different kinds of people in it. I was at a Dia El Media, the middle day ceremony of initiation, in which the new initiate greets the whole community, in which all the participants were white Anglo-Americans in their 30s. It was sort of a kind of Gen X Santeria, and I'd never seen anything like this.
Well, what's the opinion of the official church about this? How has the church handled it, both in contemporary times, but also over time? I'm sure there's been an evolution there in what the Vatican would have to say about Santeria, for instance.
Well, the church has never been sympathetic to Santeria. It's been impossible to do anything about it. If the African heritage is so pervasive in Cuba and so many people have been touched by it and moved by it, it would be impossible and foolhardy, I think, for the church to try to eliminate it. Not to say that there weren't attempts to do this. There were various attempts to ban drumming and ban practices. Priests were harassed when the U.S. government occupied Cuba. There was a particular attempt to stamp out Afro-Cuban celebrations and shows of power and force. So there have been many attempts to stamp it out, but it's too pervasive.
Have scholars had a chance to see just how well it's held on in Cuba?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, Arturo. Let's.
Who are you asking?
Well, anybody who knows the answer, I guess.
Well, go ahead, Joe.
Well, I was sort of hoping you'd answer it because I haven't been to Cuba, so.
Okay.
I'm relying on lots of reports, but have you been there, Arturo?
Have
you?
Yes, I have.
Well, would you speak to it?
Well, there are scholars who are going to Cuba and have done work in Cuba, not many. But what I have found by my going down, and I've made several trips now, is that people are really very open in talking with you. And I think in particular, the Santeros and Babalaos in particular, really interested in talking with people who are doing doing serious scholarship because they want the word to get out, and they want the word, the correct word, let's say, to get out, because they recognize the things that they're facing. You know, they certainly, as you mentioned before, in terms of what you see in the media, you know, what the Roman Catholic Church has said and done, you know. And I think in your conversation with Willie, he would sort of highlight some of the problems that are going on today, vis-a-vis that friction between the Roman Catholic Church and the Santeros. So nevertheless, I think that that you will find people who are really very interested in sharing the information. And for the most part, all of my experiences with people that I've dealt with in Santeria have been really very beautiful experiences. And we were talking about people who are very godly, people who are very very much at peace, you know, within themselves, and so there's a kind of a joy and happiness, particularly when people begin to talk about their santo, you know, their orisha, you know, this person that has done, you know, so much, this deity that has done so much, you know, for them, for their lives. It's like you can't hold them back.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about Santeria, the Afro-Caribbean faith that grew up in sort of a collision of Europe and West Africa in the New World. And we're having this conversation because the Pope is going to arrive in Cuba momentarily, the head of the Roman Catholic Church, and Cuba, one of the chief homes of the Santeria faith. Joseph Murphy is here with me in Washington, the author of Santeria, an African Religion in America, professor of theology at Georgetown University. Arturo Lindsay is in Atlanta, Georgia, professor of art and art history at Spelman College, and the author of Santeria Aesthetics in Contemporary Latin American Art. Our number is 800-989-8255. Estela's in Miami. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. Hi, Ray. I was calling about the statistics in the membership for the Santeria movement or church. I'm a Cuban-American. I live in Miami, and I lived in Cuba till I was 12. I don't think that I ever even heard of Santeria until I got here. I don't know any Santeros. I don't think there are that many of them. If there are that many in Cuba now, I assume that it's been in the last 40 years that their membership has increased. I was wondering if your panel could answer to what to why did that happen? Why the Catholic Church lost members as the Santeria movement increased their memberships? And if that is the case, why are there so many of Santeros nowadays?
Well, first, I think there have always been many, many Santeros in Cuba, and Estela, if you haven't seen them, you know, I think it's maybe you weren't looking in the right places, because all reports and all the evidence suggest that there's been pervasive and energetic communities that have been there for 200 years. As far as the growth in contemporary Cuba, it may have something to do with it's become convenient for the Cuban government to highlight Santeria for tourist and hard currency purposes, that people have come to Santeros to become initiated and to pay for the fiestas that accompany initiation, and that's been a great boon to the Cuban economy.
Arturo?
Yes, if I may add that, Estela, I think that in response to your question, I think that one of the reasons why you probably did not see as much as you thought you should is because the religion for many, many years was underground, and by necessity it had to be underground because of the persecution that had existed for all of the years. In addition to that, besides just sort of the physical persecution, what you also had is a stigma. And any nice, decent, middle-class Cuban family would not want to be associated, quote-unquote, with Santeria. But I'm sure that you heard it, because as I said before, you heard it in the music. You had it in the rhythm. You danced, you know, at 12 years old, you know, to music that had the beat of the bata drum, you know, that had the music playing, you know, all along. I think what you have today, and I think Joseph is very correct, you know, when he said that the government in Cuba today has allowed, you know, more Santeria to become more visible because of the hard currency that they were able to get, you know, from that. So I'm not sure how much of a growth there is. I think mainly what we have is more of a visibility, you know, in that because people do not have to hide, you know, anymore, and they're able to come out, you know, and express themselves, you know, all of a sudden you're seeing a whole lot of people, and people that you may know, they probably were people in your family, you know, who probably would not talk to you about it then, but they could probably talk to you about it today.
And Estela, one more thing. If there weren't really that many santeros, you couldn't go to Calle Ocho and see a large shop that's called Clothing for Santeros, and it just sells clothing for the ceremonies and for people, the all-white clothing for people to wear. I mean, there wouldn't be that much demand. You don't see that kind of thing in, I don't know, Minneapolis.
Probably do.
Certainly. No, I understand that. It's just that I think that the tourist issue that one of your panel members mentioned is important. I think that the Catholic Church had to go underground, and the other religions had the opportunity to increase their memberships. I think that a lot of the Catholic Church is closed, including the one in my parents' hometown, because the government was against organized religion, and most of the people that I know that are Cuban are Catholic. Not all of them are practicing Catholics, but Catholic, and definitely not santeros. It may have to do with a middle class issue also, I understand that. But I just wanted to make that point that I don't think it's a majority. I've heard in the news in these last few days even 60% of the Cuban people are santeros. That is not the tradition of the Cuban people. The tradition of the Cuban people is certainly Christian, and it's Catholic in its majority.
Estela, thanks a lot for your call.
Thank you very much.
We'll go next to Des Moines, Iowa. Rudy, welcome to the program.
Hi, Ray. Great to talk to you. Listened to you for a long time.
Thank you.
I'd like to clarify a couple of things. At least I'm a Cuban-American. By the way, I'm one of those kids that came out in 62 you were talking about in the earlier program.
Oh, you're a Peter Pan?
Yeah.
Oh.
And I ended up in Des Moines. It's great up here. Cold, but great. you're talking about santeros as anybody that practices Santeria. My dad was very into Santeria, but he was not a santero. A santero is more of a priest. He had a santero he went to for his spiritual needs, but he was not a santero himself. As far as, and then I have a question, as far as in the old days in Cuba, I remember being 7, 8, 9 years old and going to Bebes, which are, a Bebes is kind of a celebration towards a saint in the Santeria religion. And these things will last 2 and 3 days. They're opened. And in fact, the one I remember the most, they have every year, they almost have to close the block because it was just full of people going to these things. Also, and I'll get to my question in a second, also, almost everybody that I know that's into Santeria are great people, you know, just real humanitarians. So my question is, like you, I agree that every time I see something about Santeria on TV, there's somebody being let out of the house because they did something with a child, they killed a chicken in the house or whatever. Is there any kind of a movement or anything to contradict this among the people that are into Santeria?
Let me just, that's Rudy in Des Moines. Let me just remind people that they're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Is Santeria coming more into the light? And as Rudy is obviously concerned about, is there, let's say, an avenue for people to find out about it in a less sensational, less negative way? Joseph?
Well, the Internet provides an extraordinary vehicle for santeros to speak to the broadest possible communities, and a number of very responsible people have created networks to try to get out accurate information, to take questions, to really promulgate accurate and positive views of the religion. So that's a terrific place to look for this sort of information.
Right. If you are, let's say, web capable, it's one of the pages is www.orishanet, which is orishanet.com. And if you're interested in learning more about Santeria, they explain who the major personalities in the religion are, how a devotee lives, what the practices are, the main orishas, and what their personalities are, and what part of the natural world they control, all that. Just a very, very interesting page, and a nice collision between something very ancient and something very new. It's weird to be sitting at your desk and looking at a picture of Elegua on a computer that's coming to you somewhere in the ether. Rudy in Des Moines, Iowa, thanks a lot for your call. Ray is next in Miami, Florida. Ray, welcome.
Yeah, hello, Ray. No, I was calling. I had a question, but I've been listening to so much. Santeria, it has been around for a long time in Cuba. Remember the old I Love Lucy show? Desi Arnaz would always be singing Babalu. It was in reference to that. But getting to my question and what I feel uncomfortable about Santeria, granted, I don't think I know enough about it. It's this matchup between Catholic saints, or what were once saints, and African gods. Especially, I don't see the correlation, let's say, between Chango, a god of war, and Santa Barbara. Like, I don't, you know, there's something about that, the question of what is truly the underlying value system to Santeria. I guess that in essence is my question. What is the value system that's there?
Well, we'll talk about that in at further length before the break, but just to clear up why a Catholic saint like Saint Barbara would represent a divinity, a Santeria divinity like Chango, maybe, Joseph, you can explain that a little bit.
I think it might be the accoutrement in her image, that she wears a red cape, she wears a crown, there's a castle in her image, all of these suggesting royalty, red power. And therefore, I think what you see in that image is Chango incarnated, if you will, in the figure, in this case, of a woman. So people are often confused. Chango is a very powerful spirit. Why a woman? Well, the woman incarnates Chango. She wears his regalia.
And Ray will pick up your points after we come back later. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Ray Suarez. My guests are Joseph Murphy and Arturo Lindsay. We're going to take a short break now. When we return, we'll talk to a master of ceremony in a Santeria church, and we'll take more of your calls at 800-989-8255. To contact us here at Talk of the Nation, you can send us email at totn@npr.org. Or regular mail, Talk of the Nation Letters, 635 Massachusetts Avenue Northwest, Washington, D.C., 20001. At 33 minutes past the hour, it's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Support for National Public Radio comes from this and other NPR stations. Contributors also include the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, the Lila Wallace Reader's Digest Fund, helping people to make the arts part of their everyday lives, and SAP, a better return on information, software helping nearly 8,000 companies in 50 countries. www.sap.com. This is NPR. National Public Radio.
I'm Ray Suarez. When Harriet Beecher Stowe wrote Uncle Tom's Cabin nearly a century and a half ago, she brought the abolitionist's message to the White House. With Clinton's race initiative and the slavery debate reigniting, we choose Uncle Tom's Cabin for this month's book club. We'll be joined by author Jane Smiley and you for the Book Club of the Air on the next Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Welcome back to Talk of the Nation. I'm Ray Suarez. The Pope, John Paul, will arrive in Cuba in the next hour or so, and we're talking today about Santeria, the Afro-Catholic syncretic religion that's grown up in the Spanish-speaking world in the Western Hemisphere. Joining me now is Miguel Ramos, an oriete, or master of ceremony, and an adjunct professor at Florida International University. Welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me, Ray.
Well, I know that this hour we're talking to a lot of people who are very, very unfamiliar with the day-to-day worship life of an individual, what the community might do when it gathers. If somebody was to tag along with you to a regular worship service, what would they notice that's different and what would they notice that's familiar?
Well, what they would notice that's familiar is devotion. I think Orisha worship or the Lukumi practices are religious in every aspect. Religion is not just one part of our lives. Religion conforms our life. We're very devotional people. In my practices, you would see me conducting services, conducting prayers, conducting initiations, chanting, basically worshiping the deities in the way that our African ancestors taught us to.
So there's music, there's burning of candles and incense, let's say?
Well, candles, yes. Incense, no. That's more of a spiritualist element, not necessarily employed in Orisha worship or, as is pejoratively known, Santeria.
And there's always so much focus on animal sacrifice. What part does that take in the overall worship life of the community?
It's a very essential part of our practices, due to the fact that we view animal sacrifice as a communion with the deities. We offer the blood and certain parts of the animal to the deities, and we consume the edible meat. So our sacrifice to the deities is basically a communion between the devotee and the deity.
Are you someone who would be consulted if someone's having trouble, either in their work or personal life, or just feeling spiritually uncomfortable or going through a turbulent time in their life? Would they visit you and perhaps talk it out, perhaps get some suggestions for worship and devotion?
In all aspects of life, I guide devotees through the cycles that we believe are destined for us to follow here in life. Through divination, I interpret the oracles, and try to look for mediation between the sky and an immediate problem. One of the principal emphases of Yoruba religion in general, and Cuba and Brazil and Trinidad and so on and so forth, is the emphasis on the here and now. While we have provisions for the afterlife, our religion emphasizes the good things in life as well, and helping our devotees through the hardships that life can bestow upon an individual is part of my function as a priest. I also serve as, in my capacity as oriate, I perform divination on the third day following initiation into the priesthood. At this time, the individual is provided with the prescriptions and proscriptions that he should follow or she should follow in their daily life and in their daily relationship with their religion and the world around them.
Are there people who you're involved with through Santeria who also, in other parts of their life, are, let's say, conventional Catholics who, when there's a birth in their family, will run down to the local church to witness the baptism, who are confirmed, who are married at an altar with a priest, and so on?
Well, yes. Much has been made of this, of the distinction between Catholicism and Santeria, but little has been spoken of the bicultural nature of the Cuban population in general. Because of the abolition of the native population of the island at the onset of the conquest or the discovery, Cuba is largely African and Spanish in its heritage. Our origins are basically Spanish and African. Our religion has a very inclusivistic nature. Okay, we are not like most monotheistic religions, which are exclusive in their practices. We are open-ended and inclusivist. We see power in everything that the Supreme Being put on earth. Therefore, we don't see a conflict. Some practitioners do not see a conflict in going to a Catholic mass, going to a Bantu ceremony or the Congo Palo practices, participating in Abacua ceremonies in Cuba, going to a Cartesian spiritualist mass, and so on and so forth. Because of our inclusivistic nature, I think that is our strength today, and that's one of the things that has allowed us to survive in the revolution. Much has also been made of the fact that Castro and the revolution have tolerated Santeria. This is not necessarily accurate. It's only been in the past 10 years or so that Castro has actually opened, as Dr. Murphy said before, because of the need for hard currency. But if you speak to people who came to the U.S. in the 80s with the Mariel boat lift, they will tell you the toils that they had to go through in order to worship. Children, there was legislation in Cuba prohibiting initiation of children. If that's not an attempt to annihilate the practices, then I don't know what it is.
Miguel Ramos, thanks for being with us today.
You're welcome.
Miguel Ramos is an oriate for Santeria and an adjunct professor at Florida International University. He joined us by phone from Miami. My guests for the rest of the hour are Joseph Murphy, author of Santeria, An African Religion in America, and professor of theology at Georgetown University, and Arturo Lindsay, professor of art and art history at Spelman College, and the author of Santeria Aesthetics in Contemporary Latin American Art. If you want to join us, our number in Washington is 800-989-8255. Gloria's with us now from Seattle, Washington. Hi, Gloria.
Hello, Ray. I had a couple of questions. One was how Santeria differs from Espiritismo, which I married into a Puerto Rican family of practicing Espiritismo, and they had said that Santeria was the dark side, and it doesn't sound like that from what your guests have said. And the other question I have is about possession, because it seemed to be an important part of the practice. Spirit possession.
Anybody want to talk about Spiritismo?
Well, I could say something that actually relates to something that Willie Ramos said a few minutes ago, that the tradition that we're looking at is quite inclusive, that it insists, when it is strict, on doing it the way that the ancestors did it. But in terms of doing other things or combining with other things, it's often very loose and open to other traditions. So it's very difficult sometimes to find lines and distinctions between what is one tradition and what is another when practitioners will do many of them. So Espiritismo is spiritualism. It has its origins in Europe and was very popular in the Latin world in the 19th and, of course, the 20th centuries. So Santeria, I would define it in this way, is to say that it is the practices that come from West Africa as opposed to the European Spiritist practices.
Yeah, Gloria, there's not the influence. If you go to a consulta, if you visit someone who's going to an Espiritista, you're not going to have the sort of African paraphernalia, the long, deep history of Yoruba gods and all that. I mean, that it'll be apparent to you right away that that's not part of it. In a way, it's the world of seances and mediums, I think, would be more familiar to you if you are an Espiritista.
Well, I remember the candles being part of it, but not the sacrifices.
Arturo?
Yeah, I think that one of the similarities between Espiritismo and Santeria is the fact that you're dealing with the spirit world, and there's a notion of communication with the spirit world. But what I would say to you, Gloria, and in the sense that Espiritista is saying to you that Santeria is the dark side, is that you have these kinds of jealousies, envy, whatever, competition between religious, you know, beliefs. And, you know, one saying that this is good and this is bad, you know, et cetera. Of course, the other guys are always wrong. The other guys are always bad. In terms of what you were asking before of possession, possession, you know, happens in Santeria when an orisha has been invited to come down, or when the orisha actually decides to come down and then begin to take over the body, you know, of an individual. This is very, very prevalent throughout much of West Africa and certainly among the Yoruba. It is interesting to note that even the notion of possession, you know, continues in this country with African slaves that were brought here, but that were not necessarily following the Yoruba tradition. You could go to any black church, particularly here in the South, and in the middle of the ceremony, somebody, you know, would be possessed. There would be, you know, the deity indeed would have come down, you know, and taken that individual at that time. So that's, you know, another, I would say, difference that you would find.
Gloria in Seattle, Washington, thanks a lot for your call. Chapel Hill, North Carolina is next. Jimmy, welcome.
Thank you, Ray. I like your show.
Thanks.
My question is, nowadays it seems that there's a rise in membership in made-to-order, so to speak, religions like Santeria or Scientology. Forgive the comparison there, but it's more philosophical in nature, in that where do you see that leading in the future for religions? Do you think there perhaps might be a dissolution of, say, the Catholic Church, or perhaps a unification under a church like Santeria?
Well, if I could go after that, you know, for a second, I'm not quite sure what you mean by made for order, because essentially Santeria is a religion that began with the Yoruba, you know, several hundreds of years ago, and indeed had to keep changing and forming itself because of outside pressures that were laid on it. So that I see it, Santeria being somewhat not as a sort of made to order religion, but a religion that we have today that really is a byproduct, really resistance, you know, to forces that have been negative forces that have been laid, you know, on it. I want to go back to one of the things that Willie was saying earlier in terms of being a very inclusive religion, being a religion that by nature is very inclusive and is able to find positive things in the world, whatever positive things there are exist in the world, to take that and to find some ways in which, you know, to deal with that. Unfortunately, and this is somewhat to what, you know, Gloria was talking about before and my response about the frictions that exist, you know, between our religious beliefs. Unfortunately, I find that even in Cuba today, and Willie didn't get a chance to talk about this, but what you have is the Roman Catholic Church making very, very negative and borderline racist, you know, remarks about the people who are practicing Santeria in Havana, especially as the Pope is coming here. And that's a power struggle there, because it is about trying to get, you know, trying to exclude practitioners of, you know, of Santeria, and to keep, to therefore increase the numbers of population in that church. I think going that way is more harmful to Catholicism than anything else.
You know, Jimmy, it may be that a faith like Santeria grows in response to a search that people have as organized, centralized religions that are long familiar to the United States aren't keeping their hold on the populations. But as Arturo mentioned, Santeria is very old, and if you contrast it with the Mormon Church, which is about 150 years old, Jehovah Witnesses, the Seventh-day Adventists, Christian Science, these are all 19th-century American churches, yet now they have hospitals and schools and colleges and seem quite established and respectable. And Santeria is maybe new to these shores in relative terms, but is quite old at the same time.
Ray, if I could add one more thing on that, because his reference was to the notion of church, and I think that's an important difference in Santeria also. There is, to my knowledge, only one church, and that is Pichardo's church in Florida, which I think it's I'm glad it exists, because it's also acting as as a front line in addressing a number of the issues, you know, that deals with Santeria. But I don't see Santeria, you know, ever growing, you know, to be a church in the sense that you have, you know, huge buildings and, you know, create that sort of political structure that churches, you know, create. What I find very, very healthy and enjoyable about the religion is the one-to-one relationship that you have with your madrina, your padrino, and, you know, the other people that are in your ile. And then you create your own space within your own home. So when you think of church, you know, in this sense, if we think of church with the small c, meaning a community of people who are worshiping in a similar way. That's really where I think Santeria is, and maybe that is the wave of the future. Because frankly, I have a tremendous problem with religion, you know, in the sense of the Big C Church, that is a social political organization, you know, that then begins to dictate dogma, you know, to the rest of the population, and in essence, you know, takes all the funds, you know, and becomes wealthier and wealthier to try to stay alive.
Arturo Lindsay is in Atlanta. Joseph Murphy's here with me in Washington. I'm Ray Suarez. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Susan is with us now from Norfolk, Virginia. Susan, welcome.
Thank you. I was in Cuba from, just briefly, but about a year and a half ago, and I was hanging out with an Afro-Cuban dance group called Acheilla, and they were all very much practitioners of Santeria, and I went with them and saw a lot of dancing and drumming and saw a lot of how it influenced their lives. But these people were very clear that what they practiced did not involve animal sacrifice. They referred to sort of what they did being the light side, and that the animal sacrifice part of it was sort of the dark side. And they pointed out the different altars and how you could tell the difference between one kind of altar and the other, and the kind that practiced animal sacrifice would, I think I remember this correctly, would have would not have a cross on it, and the other kind would. So I'd like your guest to address that. And I would throw in that I'm not being condemnatory of the idea of animal sacrifice, because as a vegetarian, I recognize that probably the stuff going on in the meat industry is worse than what goes on in an animal sacrifice. But thank you very much, and I'd like your guest to address those.
Joseph Murphy?
Yeah, I'd like to maybe talk about the dark side, too. The word dark kind of gives it away in some ways, I think, that what is most African, what is most black, is often the most stigmatized part of the tradition, and therefore you find people disliking things that refer to class and race that is different than their own. So I think that might be one part of that dark side part. I don't know, anyone can construct their own melange of traditions and practice that, and practice it well, and practice it gracefully. But as Willie Ramos said, animal sacrifice is a key element in the Yoruba traditions that have come over. And I just one more thing, as she said, the meat industry is no better. It's extraordinary to me when I talk about this tradition, and people always bring up animal sacrifice, and I'm stunned as to what people think goes on to create chicken McNuggets and quarter pounders. That animals die a great deal. There's a santero in Los Angeles, Sammy Flores, who says you can kill an animal for any reason in this country except to pray over it. And I think there's a great deal of truth in that.
Susan in Norfolk, Virginia, thanks a lot for your call. Ron's with us now from San Jose, California.
Hi, Ray. Thank you so much. I love your show. And the question I have for your guests are that our understanding, or my understanding of Santeria, is that there are levels of communications based upon the intelligence of the animal that's being sacrificed. You can go from a roach to a snake to a chicken. And what sort of got everyone interested here in California was when the San Jose Mercury had the dogs and the children. And I know that chickens die to make chicken McNuggets for those that eat it, but the thought of a child opening up the throat of a yellow Labrador to pray to God somehow causes my hackles to raise a little bit. Could they explain, and is it a great leap of the imagination, that if it is better to sacrifice a dog, where does a child and a human being come in? We're animals, too. Could you address that? I'll take my answer in the air. Thank you.
Thanks, Ron.
To the best of my knowledge, the animals that are sacrificed as food. It has nothing to do with the intelligence or gradations of intelligence of the animals. It what constitutes food. So chickens and goats and sheep are the most common and desirable foods in most communities, and those are the foods. If dogs are being sacrificed, which I haven't heard of in the United States, that would be a food-connected element, and I've never, ever heard of a child being sacrificed.
Well, he means using a child in order to,
I'm sorry.
The fatal cut.
It's such a frequent accusation about sacrifice.
Yeah. Yeah, it is one of those things about Santeria worship that does, Joseph, as you mentioned, attract a lot of attention, even though animal sacrifice has been a feature of human worship for, well, since I guess we stood up on our hind legs.
Thanksgiving.
Do we have time for one more? Let me take one more, but he's got to be brief. Victor, do you think you can be brief?
I can. I'll try to be. I can hardly hear you, but as long as you can hear me. I'm really curious as to why in the Caribbean islands the African connection seems to be so much stronger than it is among African Americans, in the sense that people know they're Yoruba and people can speak the language. And also, if there's something about American Protestantism in the U.S. among African Americans versus Spanish Catholicism in the Caribbean that made Santeria the thing it is in the Caribbean and not anything quite like it among African Americans.
Well, Victor, we may not be able to get to both of those, but how about the first? Why is it that Africa is so much more present in some places than it is in others?
Numbers and recency, that people came in large numbers in a relatively short period of time.
And could that have a bearing on the second part of Victor's question? Rather than a difference between Protestantism and Catholicism, just a difference at the level of which Africa was eradicated in the people itself?
Well, I think the slavery in the United States was more of a scientific by nature, you know, in the sense that it was a greater concentration was spent on dividing people, dividing families, dividing clan groups, etc., fearing that would lead to revolts. It was obvious what happened in Haiti, you know, because of people being together. I think Roman Catholicism played something in that, though.
Arturo Lindsay, author of Santeria Aesthetics in Contemporary Latin American Art, a teacher at Spelman College, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Joseph Murphy, a professor of theology at Georgetown and author of Santeria, an African Religion in America. Good to have you with us.
Thank you, Ray. Take care, Arturo.
Earlier we talked to Miguel Ramos, master of ceremony for Santeria, or an Oriete. Tune in to Talk of the Nation at this time tomorrow for a discussion about the 25th anniversary of the Supreme Court case versus Roe v. Wade that legalized abortion. In Washington, I'm Ray Suarez, NPR News.
This program is a production of National Public Radio. The views expressed are not necessarily those of NPR, the underwriters, or this broadcast station. NPR is solely responsible for this program. Tapes and transcripts of Talk of the Nation are available. Call anytime, toll-free 1-888-NPR-NEWS. That's toll-free 1-888-NPR-NEWS.
Support for National Public Radio comes from this and other National Public Radio stations. Contributors also include the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Toyota USA Foundation, in support of Science Friday Kids Connection, the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, making grants to improve health and health care for all Americans, and the William T. Grant Foundation, supporting research on the development of children, adolescents, and youth. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
This is Robert Siegel. Later today on All Things Considered, a talk with President Clinton on Middle East diplomacy and other topics. Also from Cuba, news of Pope John Paul II's arrival, and Andrei Cădrescu on the architecture of Havana. Plus, the rest of the day's news later today on NPR's All Things Considered.